Chapter 12 of Revelation. Listening time is approximately 40 minutes.
I've written a lot out instead of trying to ask the questions. We'll just try to go through this. This is where it starts getting complicated because you start getting horns and crowns and little crowns, big horns, and some crowns get broken off and others grow, and it really gets confusing. I've tried to make it as succinct as possible. Well, first of all, the red dragon we know as Satan. And do you remember back in Isaiah when this original sin took place? That's what he's referring to here. Satan, Lucifer, pictured as a red dragon because of shedding of blood, a destructive destroyer, and his tail swept away a third of the stars. Well, in this case, the stars are not the 12 tribes, but they're referring to the angels. And remember, one third of the angels followed him, defected. That's what he's referring to when we read that part. So all it's doing now is connecting us that we're talking about this same person, the same being, Satan. But now it says that he has seven heads. We have crowns and we have heads. The heads is like a head of state. It's figurative. So we'll be talking about nations or empires. And there would be seven Gentile empires that he represents. And we've already studied some of them. And I've listed them for you. Talked about the Egyptian, the Assyrian, and the Babylonian, of course, took the southern kingdom into captivity. The Assyrian took the northern kingdom. And then you had the Medo-Persian took over from the Babylonian. The Greek took over from the Medo-Persian. The Roman took over from the Greek. That has already happened in world history. We're living between the sixth and the seventh of those heads in that time period. Because there will be the kingdom referred to as the Antichrist kingdom, or you might call it the New World Order, the revived Roman Empire. And relate it back to the dream that Nebuchadnezzar had about this beast or statue that had the head of gold. Remember the statue? Daniel interpreted that represent you, Nebuchadnezzar, the Babylonian Empire. And then there's going to be this other empire to come. Well, it didn't bring in Egypt and Assyria. Why? It was contemporary at that time. Daniel was literally there with Nebuchadnezzar. So it's talking about Nebuchadnezzar and forward. It's not going back. That's where it gets confusing when you start seeing these numbers. You say, oh, there's conflict in the scripture because here it says five and here it says seven. Well, it depends on if it's going forward or bringing in the Egyptian or the Assyrian. Here, it's going back and capping the whole thing. But we know that that statue part represents those last five. It gets to the upper part of the body, and that is the what? The Babylonian. Now down in here, the thorax area, is the Medo-Persian. Medo-Persian, two. Then after them, you come the Greek here, and then you get the Roman represented by the legs. And remember, you had that iron and clay and the mixture and that. Well, you had a breakup of the Roman Empire into the eastern and the western parts. Constantinople, which is today is called what? Istanbul. That was the eastern capital. And the western capital was Rome. This is after the Roman Empire starts to break down. This is after Christ now. After 70 AD when they destroyed the temple. Then what happened? You got these feet with 10 toes that this stone cut out, not by man, comes and falls on this feet, breaks them, and the whole statue collapses and the stone fills the earth. Well, that's right here. Because the toes is the Antichrist kingdom. 10 configurations, 10 toes. And you'll see when sometime you'll talk about 10 horns. Well, that's those 10. Antichrist is divided into 10 regions. But basically, the seven heads are seven Gentile empires. Six have already taken place, and the seventh is a short-lived one, very short. And that's what we're studying, by the way, in the tribulation. That's his empire that he's trying to build up. Under D, now we have 10 horns. Heads have horns. So what is that then? Horns are power. So what does he have? That he has power over with 10 horns. But he only has 7 heads. So what is it saying? If you look at these 6, it's like this 7th one is accumulation of all those. Because it's more of a world domination. These weren't world, were they? They were regional. They all took place in what part of the world that we know today?
Middle East.
Yeah, the expanded Middle East. The Mediterranean basin, coming around from Italy, Greece, down through Turkey, and then into the Middle East. That was the main part. This is God's design. There were other empires. The Chinese had one and so on. But this is where God's working his plan now. So they're all under that. That's what's symbolic of. But he has these 10 horns. So it means he has power now over 10 regions, world regions. Today, the world has been divided by world leaders. If you know kind of behind the scenes, you got to watch certain Christian things. But how many regions is it divided into? Now, here's going to be a debate, and I've studied both of them, and they both have some significance to them. United Europe is the old Roman Empire. How many divisions are in this confederacy of the United Europe? There are 10. There are many more than 10 countries, but there are 10 political regions, and they have divided all of Europe up, and then as these other countries come in, but there are 10 political regions, and they have divided all of Europe up, and then as these other countries come in, and so it's like states or provinces, and they're setting up the government in each of these, and then there's one place where there's the central government. And if you study this in detail, you will find that the central government building, which will be the EU Parliament, is built to resemble the Tower of Babel. Now you can see how demonic this whole thing is becoming. I mean, it literally is there. You know what their flag is? The flag is the old Babylonian. Their seal is the harlot riding the beast, which we'll be studying.
The one that you're referring to, the headquarters.
Is it Brussels? It's exactly what's pictured in Revelation of the Antichrist kingdom. There are 10 regions. That's what I want to get at. That may refer to that, but the world has 10 regions. Do you know that? Do you know what number we are? North America? We're number one. And that includes Mexico. Canada, U.S., and Mexico is number one. Central and South America is number two. What do you think NAFTA was all about? It's connecting these regions up. So number one now is unified, because Canada and the U.S., you can go back and forth. Now they want to break down the border of Mexico. Why do you think the government doesn't want to seal the border off? See, it's a bigger issue, because they want to unify this whole number one. I don't know who will be in charge of number one, but they got the whole world divided into 10 zones. So I don't know which 10 is being talked about here, but that's that 10 horns. 10 power zones. But the Antichrist will over the whole thing. And I don't know if it's referring to that 10 of the United Europe or the 10 of the world. I think it's the Europe, but I think it expands, and therefore it will be the world. Verses, I haven't turned the page yet. 4 and 6, third of the stars, referring to angels. And if you want the reference for that, it's Isaiah 14, 12 to 17. It's also in Ezekiel 28, 12 through 17. They're similar.
Well, which angels were those? The good ones? The bad ones? Both?
They're the demons of today. That shows that they had free will. But we have two-thirds on our side. Number two, righteous is equal to what? Administering. Let's look at Hebrews 1:14. The righteous angels are referred to as administering angels. And who do they administer to? There's your verse. It's a great verse. You ever get discouraged? You think Satan's getting a lot of control? Read Hebrews 1:14.
Are not all angels ministering spirits sent to serve those who will inherit salvation?
What does it mean to inherit salvation? Why does it say inherit?
Mine says receive.
Receive. But inherit's a good word because it ties it to something else. Somebody has to die for you to get an inheritance, right? To inherit it through Christ, it's referring to his crucifixion. Inherit's a better word because it really parallels it to Christ. It took somebody to die. You ever done anything foolish? Especially as a teenager, driving or climbing trees or doing things for the thrill of it. You could have been killed very easily, and you weren't. I can recall times that angels intervened, at least three times I can think of. We thank God, that's God's mercy, protecting us when we don't deserve it. Read Matthew 2:16 and 17. What's that referring to? This is referring to Satan has been trying to get rid of Israel so Israel cannot give birth to the Messiah. That was his whole first plan during the Old Testament. But once Jesus came and was ministering, he wanted to get Jesus killed. So foolish not even to recognize that was God's plan, that he would die. Then his plan after that became what we're studying now, is that he's going to be Jesus to Jerusalem. And that's what's going on in world history right now. That's why Jerusalem is the hotbed. What did Christ come to do other than just save? But what does that really give us? What's the big word? What's the big word about being an American? We have what?
Freedom.
Do you know that true freedom is God's plan? And that's why he gave us his ways of living, because then we do have freedom. When you're in bondage to sin, do you have freedom? You think somebody that lives out of a bottle has freedom? They have freedom to do it, choice, but no, they're in bondage to that. They love it and they hate it. This child was a boy, is a man-child, to rule the nations with a rod of iron. That's referring to Jesus, and it's referring to the millennium when he's going to rule. The rod of iron, because there still can be sinning going on with authority. A child's taken away from the dragon and brought to heaven. So what's that? The dragon, Satan, the child is Christ. So what would that be? When did this occur? It could be that's part of it, obviously. He's brought back to life. But it says, and he's taken to heaven. So this is probably the ascension. Or it could be, do you remember when Jesus came out of the tomb and was sitting there in the garden? And once there was that acknowledgement with Mary Magdalene, what did he tell her? Don't touch me, because
I have not yet ascended to my Father.
One word in there, fully, completely. What does that mean? Now this could refer into that too. He was in the process. What happened? On the cross, when all sin came on him, what did he say? Father, why have you forsaken me? That was the tragedy of the cross, because God the Father turned on Christ, turned his back on him. Because he became sin. God can't look at sin. See, all fits together. So what happened then? He was separated from God. That had not been fully completed at that time. So it's almost like it's a metamorphosis taking place, where it's all being connected back again. So in other words, the whole picture of the cross hadn't been completed yet, not until they were able to touch him. Beautiful scene when he comes to that room where they're waiting. We look down on Thomas. Oh, he was doubting Thomas. Don't look down on him. He was a cousin of Jesus. If he hadn't said that, we wouldn't have had those verses. Because what did Jesus say then? Come and touch the nail prints. come in touch with the spirit was in my side. Validation, this is me. They could touch him, but before they couldn't touch him because he hadn't fully completed this whole thing referred to as the crucifixion, resurrection, the salvation package. It wasn't fully finished yet. We always think of it just being he died on the cross. No, it started when he was tried. The false trial and everything, the beatings, the crucifixion itself, what he did in those 3 days, the resurrection, all that. And I think it actually goes to the point to where they can touch him is when that was completed. So this could refer to that, or it could refer to his actual literal ascension. I tend to believe it's the first one that I mentioned, the end of the whole salvation package. In chapter 12, we talked about this woman. In this case, there are several pictures figurative of a woman, and it's not always the same. Here, it is the nation of Israel giving birth to Jesus. Because we have in Genesis 37, remember the dream Joseph had? His father was like the sun, his mother Rachel was like the moon. And it's not Leah, it's Rachel. Why? Who had the dream? Joseph, what was his mother?
Rachel,
not Leah. And then you had the 12 stars. At that time, there were 11 of the sheaves that fell down because he's one of the 12. So there'd be 11 brothers. So don't get confused there. So we have Israel giving birth to the Messiah. And we even went back into Genesis chapter 3 where it said about the head being bruised and the heel being bruised. Satan was going to bruise the heel of Jesus, but Jesus was going to crush the head of Satan. In other words, the cross was like a sting, and Satan thought he had victory over God, but in reality, his demise begins to take place. So that's what's happening here. So the woman then is a picture of Israel. And then we talked about the dragon and being red. He's powerful. He's a killer. We talked about the seven heads and the seven Gentile empires. And that's going to come up again. And the 10 horns. Horns represent what? Heads can have horns, and horns can have crowns. So horns is representing of the power, the authority. The seven crowns relates to seven heads, not the 10 horns. All this is coming together now. There have always been the spirit of the Antichrist. Nebuchadnezzar was before his conversion. We saw it in Alexander the Great. We saw it in Epiphanes and Antiochus, who was one of Alexander's generals who destroys the second temple that Zerubbabel built. So we see this over and over, but now it's saying it's all coming together in one final, the Antichrist. So he's representing all that evil from the past of those empires. And then we get over to the next page. And we have the dragon's tail. And there we went back to Isaiah, and you'll see it in Ezekiel as well, the same imagery. This is going way back now when there was that battle in heaven, and Lucifer is kicked out, but he takes his tail, symbolically wipes away these stars, which are representative of angels. So he has 1/3 of the angels that followed him. We call them demons today. They're fallen angels. And then we have the ministering angels that are the 2/3. And you can read about that in Hebrews 1:14. Chapter 12, verse 7. We are now at the midpoint of the tribulation, and we're going to have the Satan really getting upset. So what's chapter 12, 7 say?
If there was war in heaven, Michael and the angels under his command fought the dragon and his host of fallen angels. And the dragon lost the battle and was forced from heaven. This great dragon, the ancient serpent called the devil, or Satan, the the one deceiving the whole world, was thrown down onto the earth with all his army. Then I heard a loud voice shouting across the heavens, "It has happened at last. God's salvation and the power and the rule and the authority of his Christ are finally here. For the accuser of our brothers has been thrown down from heaven onto earth. He accused them day and night before our God. They defeated him by the blood of the Lamb and by their testimony, for they did not love their lives, but laid them down for him." Come on, prayer. "Rejoice, O heavens, you citizens of heaven, rejoice. Be glad, but woe to you people of the world, for the devil has come down to you in great anger, knowing that he has little time."
There's a lot of information here that relates to the present day as well. Who's our accuser?
Satan.
When will he not have access to heaven? When the midpoint of the tribulation occurs and this event occurs, he no longer has access to heaven. Now, who's doing battle there?
Michael and Satan.
Okay, Michael. Why Michael?
He's the archangel.
Where's the real battle? Satan, through the Antichrist, has deceived Israel to make a peace treaty at the beginning of the tribulation. That's a deception to take them off guard. So he thinks he's got control. Because what is Satan's goal? And then what is the Antichrist's goal? What is Satan trying to do?
Take over the world.
Why?
He wants to be God.
Okay, more detail.
He wants to be in control.
Why?
Because he's evil.
He hates God.
He hates.
Okay, but literally now, where was the first battle taking place? There's a series of battles, all right? Here's heaven. Started in heaven. Okay, battle number one is in heaven. Where's battle two?
On earth.
Where, specifically?
Armageddon.
No. Battle 2 is in the Garden of Eden. That's where battle 2 is. Satan is now here in the tree of knowledge of good and evil, and he tries to get Eve. That's a battle. It's a subtle thing, deception and all this stuff, but he wants to get free out of the cage. So this is where battle 2 takes place. We call it the temptation in chapter 3 of Genesis. That's battle 2. Now, battles 3 and on go all the way through the scripture, where Satan is trying to prevent the Messiah from coming into the world. At the time of Herod was going to kill Jesus. So there was another battle. So there are many, many other battles here that take place all through the Old Testament, that Satan knows Scripture and he's trying to stop the Messiah from coming into the world, which he couldn't do. And then he tries to stop him from doing what? Carrying out his ministry. He starts off by tempting him. So there are all kinds of battles going on. I don't know how many, but numerous battles. Okay. And finally, we get to the point of a huge one, and I don't know what number that would be, but the cross was the other one, because Satan wanted Jesus crucified. It was God's plan that he be crucified, but not by being called by the Jews to be crucified. Be crucified by the Gentiles, not by the Jews. So I don't know what number here. We could put 1,000. I don't know. But many, many, many times Satan has been trying to intervene and stop things from happening. He divided the kingdom of Israel. Look at the thing with Judah. When the guy Judah followed the Messianic line. What happened? He's got a gift from Judah to David. Right? What happened? Judah had 3 sons. What happened to son number one? With Tamar. He didn't have a child. He became disfavored to God. So then the second son was supposed to marry her, which he did. But he wouldn't allow conception to take place. So God did away with him. Now Tamar didn't wait for the third son, and Judah wouldn't give him. Because he said, "My gosh, I've lost 2 sons over this woman already." He didn't see it was because they were disobedient to God. So Tamar starts getting into action, and she dresses up like a prostitute and attracts Judah because his wife had died, and they have relations, and they have a child. And now the error is continued on. See, Satan is trying to break that constantly. So then what happens at the cross? Well, we call Good Friday, which should be really Wednesday. But anyway, that's the high holy day for Satan worshipers. And that's why there's everything to destroy the resurrection. Because without the resurrection, we just have what? Just a nice man who died. That's the end of it. But no, the resurrection. Satan now is upset over that. So where does the next great battle take place? We're back to Israel again now, what we've been studying. So now it's taking place in this first 3.5 years of the tribulation, where now he's going to come at it deceptive again. He was deceiving over here. Now he's deceiving the nation over here. I'll take care of you. His battle, remember, is still against God. So then he goes up to heaven with his horde of demons and has this battle here with God. And that's what we're reading about right now. Then he comes back, and now he makes war with the offspring, which is the nation of Israel. Now he turns against them because he was banned. He walks into the temple and says, I'm God, you worship me. Well, that wakes them up. And so they start going against them, and now he starts going against them. And that's what this is setting up. Let's read the cross references in Daniel. Daniel chapter 10, verse 13.
That for 21 days the mighty evil spirit who overruled the kingdom of Persia blocked my way. Then Michael, one of the top officers of the heavenly army, came to help me, so I was able to break through the spirit rulers of Persia.
So what's that telling us? Now this is flashing back to the time of Daniel, but I put it in there because first of all it talks us about this angel Michael, and that there is a battle. Daniel's in Persia, and what is he saying? What's Michael telling him? Daniel been praying, and Michael was delayed in coming. How many days?
21
days, that's 3 weeks. Now get the reality of this. Michael, battling the demons to get to Daniel. When you're going to start getting into a battle, when's the time to start praying? When the battle is taking place? No, way before. Michael's powerful. There is a literal spiritual battle. Don't ever think that angels are women with wings. Swords get hung up in wings. Angels are warriors. The church has distorted this whole thing. And a lot of church, ancient art of the church should be burned. You've ever seen it? That Gothic art? They have pictures of Christ and everything, and it's just grotesque. But they got all these cherubim and angels fluttering all over and all this kind of stuff. I think it gives us a false view of things. There's a battle going on, and Michael is dealing with that because Daniel is a Jew. Next one, Daniel 12, 1 and 2.
At that time, Michael, the great prince who protects your people, will arise. There will be a time of distress such as not happened from the beginning of nations until then. But at that time, your people, everyone whose name is found written in the book, will be delivered. Multitudes who sleep in the dust of the earth will awake, some to everlasting life, lasting contempt.
What time period is that one referring to?
Very end time.
Yeah, exactly where we're studying right now, isn't it? That time period. And again, it shows that Michael is going to be doing battle for them. Where God is going to pour these bold judgments out to try to get them to repent out of love.
13 through 18.
The woman was given the two wings of a great eagle, so that she might fly to the place prepared for her in the desert, where she would be taken care of for a time, times, and a half time, out of the serpent's reach. Then from his mouth the serpent spewed water like a river to overtake the woman and swept her away with the torrent. But the earth helped the woman by opening its mouth and swallowing the river that the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. Then the dragon was enraged.
We're at the midpoint of the tribulation. Satan has come down from heaven and he's angry. He's gone into the temple and desecrated it. Now we have this remnant that God's going to save. Because many of the people who get saved end up dying, martyred. But he's got a remnant because he's going to keep them alive till the very day he comes back. So he takes his remnant out of here, and where does he take them? This woman that's being talked about is Israel. And the child, of course, is the Messiah. But here we're talking about the woman, meaning Israel. This remnant is being taken out. Where is it going? And how long are they going to be gone? This is Israel here, and you have the two seas and the Jordan River coming down. Up here is the Sea of Galilee. What's the other name for it? The Romans named it the Sea of, after an emperor, Tiberius. So some maps will have that. Down here is the Dead Sea. Or what else? The Great what Sea?
Salt
Sea. Salton Sea. Over on this side is where you had Moab, the Philistines, the Amorites and Moabites, all these people were over in here, on that side of the Jordan. Jerusalem's over here. So this remnant is being taken over here, we know, because as we read in our cross-references, we'll see that it says Moab, Ammon, and so on. Well, we know that those regions were over here. What country today is that? Jordan will be protected from the Antichrist. He will not be able to go in there. But we do know that there's a city in Jordan that's been preserved, and it was only discovered, I think, about 1912 by a British explorer called Petra. Anybody been to Petra? It's on these cliff types. There's an opening, you're looking down, and then there's the city is carved out all the way around here. There's just one way in, and it's actually like a tunnel. It's very narrow, and so horses couldn't ride through there. You can't get an army going through there very fast, so they can defend the city very easy. All they have to do is stand here and pick off them one at a time as they came in. So they were left alone. This city was abandoned, remember, because it was the capital of what we read about in one of the minor prophets, Nahum. Remember, they were laughing when God was disciplining the southern kingdom. They came over and sat and laughed at their calamity. And God sent Nahum over here and said, what? You're going to be done away with and you won't even exist. They're called the Edomites. This was the Edom capital. And who were the Edomites? They were descendants of who? Esau. Esau was red. These rocks are red. Edom means red. It's a speculation, but I think it's a pretty good one. It's in Jordan, and they could wait out the 3.5 years. It said time, times, and a half times. That's a Hebrew code for years. A time, singular, is 1 year. Times is 2 years, and a half time is a half a year. And you add that up, and you get 3.5 years. So during this whole period here, they're going to be protected. That's what this is saying. Let's look at the cross references to it. The first one comes in Exodus 19:4 and Deuteronomy 32:11. It says, into the wilderness. Wilderness can mean several things. Generally, it means non-Jewish. Out of the land is the wilderness. It can be a literal wilderness or just mean outside of Israel. What does it say in Exodus 19:4?
You yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself.
We're dealing with the eagle's wings. Deuteronomy 32:11.
He spreads his wings over them, even as an eagle outspreads her gun. She carries them upon her wings, as does the Lord, his people.
If you study certain Bible teachers on Revelation, you'll say, oh, this is the U.S., because our symbol is the eagle, and we're going to have an airlift, and we're going to fly some big planes in here, and we're going to take this remnant and fly them out. And I think you even see that in that end time series thing. No, this is total imagery. That's pretty arrogant to think that, isn't it? So there are two cross references about eagle's wings. Who's the eagle? Who's really protecting them? God. He used the cloud to shield them from the sun and so on and direct them. This is a true story to illustrate this. There was a time when this farm, it was real dry, and the fields across the street from the farm. There was a road here, the farm was there, the house, and then the field was over here, and the wind was blowing this way. The field got on fire, and there were trees along here and everything else, and they were concerned that it would jump the road and get the house. Well, it didn't. It stopped in here somewhere. The boy went out and was walking down with all the burnt stuff on the road. There was this kind of a crusty thing on the road, you know how kids are, and he kicked it. And when he kicked it, little chicks started running around. He realized what it was a mother hen that had shielded them, and she was charred completely, and they survived underneath. Now there's a literal picture, and this is what God is trying to say. As this hen protected the chicks, God, being this eagle, is going to protect them. He's going to hold Satan back. In the 3.5 years now, it's God pouring out the bowl judgments, Satan running rampant through the Antichrist, attacking the Jews, and then the kings of the earth start coming in and attacking. It's all building up to the Battle of Armageddon, where almost the whole world is there. Millions and millions of people end up in the Valley of Jezreel. We know it's the Armageddon, but it's the literal valley there today. It talks about they're going to be killed and their blood's going to be as high as the horse's bridle. Well, it just means a lot of blood's being shed. I don't think the eagle's referring to the United States. Let's go down now and check the cross-references in Daniel 11:41 and Isaiah 26:20. This is dealing with the Edomite capital, which we refer to as Petra. Daniel 11:41.
We will also enter the beautiful land, and many countries will fall, but these will be rescued out of his hand. Edom, Moab, and the foremost of the sons of Ammon.
Remember I just mentioned that? There's your reference for it. Isaiah 26:20.
Oh, my people, enter your rooms and shut the door behind you. Hide yourselves for a little while until his wrath has passed by.
So that's what they're going to do, right? It's the wrath of God that's going to pass by that whole area, and they're going to be protected. How about this flood waters and the earth swallowing up? Let's see some cross-references there. The whole thing, apparently, Isaiah 59 and Jeremiah 46 and 47. I'm not going to read those, but basically, if you study that, what are you going to find out? What's referring to flood waters and that? Is it a literal waters and floods? That they're overcome by flood waters. It's the same imagery that the locusts are used to depict. Armies. Now, whether God does it supernatural or literally, we don't know. But the Antichrist is going to be stopped from going there. Whether it be the Israeli army or whatever. Now, what about a part of the Antichrist army is killed by God one way or another, either through the Israelites or God supernaturally. Now, what does he do then? He makes war with the remaining Jews. He's tried to trace his remnant, can't do anything there, so now he goes back and he tries to make war in Jerusalem and in that area. Psalm 124. This is a prophecy that is depicting this time. Let's read Psalm 124. A lot of the Psalms are prophetic.
If the Lord had not been on our side, let all Israel admit it, if the Lord had not been on our side, we would have been swallowed alive by our enemies, destroyed by their anger. We would have drowned beneath the flood of these people's fury and pride.
All right, there you go, flood. See?
Blessed be Jehovah, who has not let them devour us. We have escaped with our lives as a bird from a hunter's snare. The snare is broken and we are free. Our help is from the Lord who made heaven and earth.
See, that remnant is saved. And they recognize this. And it's God that's protecting them. Can you imagine how they will feel knowing that there are some of their friends that are left back there and what they might be going through?